Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, there you are. Good evening. Welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm here, Greg Williams, here at my home in right at the Medical Center in Houston, Texas. And it's great to have you with us this evening. It looks like we're getting some, I don't know if you can see from the glare, looks like we're getting some dark clouds. It's getting ready to, it's been raining off and on. It's going to be doing that for the next week, I think, here in Houston. So welcome to Texas weather. If it's not raining now, we'll be an hour from now. But this is going to be a great show tonight. Looking forward to having you on and listening in. And we always have said since the beginning of time, since we've been doing this program, which I got to count how many episodes we've done, but it's been several years, maybe seven. I can't even remember. TJ will be able to let me know. But a long time. We've done this probably maybe 6 years. But we always said if on a Sunday evening, if you'll give us 45 minutes, we'll be able to give you something that you can use, take, be better, maybe use with a friend later on in the week. TJ just texted me and said it's 7 years to come November. So that's going to be awesome. So we may have a little celebration. We want you to know that you can get involved several different ways. You can call in straight and talk to the guest tonight. He's going to be back by popular demand. He's been on twice, and this will be his third time. So we're going for the trifecta tonight because there's a big hockey game. I guess they're playing Stanley Cup tonight or something like that on TV. And then across the street tomorrow, there's going to be a big, 500,000 extra people in the neighborhood over here at the NRG playing soccer right here in Houston. But if you want to get involved, 888-627-6008 will be the way. And TJ will answer the phone and just patch you right through to our guest and myself. Or you can text me, 832-396-6525. Or you can get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. And I'm right there and you can comment there. And during the bottom of the hour, we will take a little minute break and I'll be able to go on there and find out if there's any comments or questions. But we just love for you to do it. It's been one of those weeks. I don't know if I've been helping some people. I think three different people develop and write their books and encourage them that they can do it. I personally think we have probably one of the premier people that can do it because he writes books in his sleep for some reason. I don't know how he does it, but we're going to find out about that tonight. He's got 13, 14, 15, 16, something like that, books. But I'm encouraging people to do something, to leave their story, to leave their legacy, and trying to help them out. And, it seems like when we're dealing with our own abuse, our own hurts, our own pains, it sometimes takes us places that we think we have accomplished and that we've already overcome. And then all of a sudden we have a setback. I want to let you know that it is a journey. It's not a quick one single event to get over anything that has happened to you in any type of trauma or traumatic situation. So whatever's happened to you in your life, you got to be able to go through the process. And you need to, if it's been sexual abuse or verbal abuse or domestic abuse or whatever it is, You need to recognize that what happened to you was wrong, that the abuser is the one that's the one that caused it. You did not. He did. The perpetrator is at fault, and the responsibility belongs to him. And the survivor's value and worth is not diminished by what's happened to you. So let's look at it this way. For instance, let's take this $100 bill, okay? And let's just wad it up, beat it up, and just throw it away. Throw it here on the counter. It looks like this. It's got all kinds of wrinkles and just wad. You can step on it, you can drag it through the dirt. But I'm gonna let you know, would you still pick this up and straighten it out? And would you still be able to have any value in this piece of paper, even though it's been beat up and wrapped up and wrinkled and stepped on and dirt? It still has the value, the same value. So no matter what's happened to you, you still retain the value that you are. And there's a story that I want to share about a woman that had been willed and given a beautiful antique vase, okay? And by her grandmother passed away and she left this beautiful vase. And that vase was on the table and she honored that and treasured, and it was worth a lot of money. She accidentally one day knocked it off the table and smashed it to all kinds of different pieces and fragments. Broke her heart. So let me just grab this here. So let's say this is an antique vase. I got this at Ross. As a matter of fact, Ross, $15.99. Anyway, let's say this was the vase, and it fell off the table, and it busted the smithereens. Okay, just busted all over the place. She gathered all of those pieces together, put them in a box, and carefully took it to a master craftsman and asked, is there any way that he, with all of his talent and skills and ability, and he was known miles around, cities around, that he was the one to be able to take and refurbish antique items? Can you make this whole again, where it doesn't look like it's broken? He took the box, and a few weeks later, he worked on it diligently. He returns it back to her. And where every one of the pieces were cracked, instead of trying to put them back together with glue to where it didn't look like it was broken, he took pure gold and put all those pieces together and molded it with gold in between and showing where every crack was. And it was the most beautiful vase, even more beautiful than it ever could have been from the beginning. And it was more valuable because it had gold all the way around it, all through it. But what ended up happening was he was detailing and exposing and making the best of every one of the cracks and fractures in those pieces, and filled it in with precious gold. And it was absolutely gorgeous. And we'll let you know, sexual wounds, domestic violence, being trafficked, being emotionally abused, verbally abused by your parents or your husband or your spouse can take a hit on us. And it can literally, I'm one of these victims, it can take your heart and smash it. But if you, in the proper mindset, in the proper mode, take some of the things that we say on this program by the guests that are on here and the one that you're going to be hearing tonight, that you'll be able to share some wisdom of, hey, wait, there's still value in you. There's still something that, matter of fact, you're even more valuable now, because God does not pretend in our lives that the cracks, the fractures, the hurts, the pains never happen. Instead, He lovingly, kindly, gently, and deliberately puts us back together and uses the most valuable product, Him, to be able to hold all of those pieces together. Not to let the world know this person's never been broken. To let the person know that the scars still remain. And now they have become testimonies of His healing power through us. And then we can do things like this. We can do things like our guest tonight. We can do things like the guests that we have on every week and go out and help change one person's life or millions of people's life. And it says, and I'll close this now, but it says in Psalm 147, verse 3, He, being God, heals the brokenhearted and He binds up all their wounds. No matter what you're going through right now, no matter what you've gone through, and you may still have a whole box of broken pieces and go, what do I do with this? This is all that I am. I have no value at all. Yes, you do. Give it to someone, your creator. That's the master craftsman that can put you back together and make your life something that can be even more valuable and more precious, because you have a scar to say, I've been hurt. No, you have a scar to say, I was victorious from those people that thought they were going to break me. And by golly, they didn't. Here I am. And get up and move on. And in that, we can find so much to be able to give other people. And I don't know, that's something that I needed to hear this week. Every now and then I tend to take two steps forward, one step back. But if I do that for the rest of my life, I'm still taking a step forward every time I take a step back. Two step forward, one step back, still progress. So don't be so hard on yourself. It's time to get that box, that heart, that self-esteem, some tender loving care, and hand it to someone that can take care of you in a wonderful, wonderful way. Okay. Want to welcome tonight someone that I call a friend. I mean, good night. We've met several times now. Keith Groundsel. TJ, go ahead and bring Keith in, because I'll keep rambling if not. Look at the background of this wallpaper behind him. He is just a writer, and this is only a minute amount of books. But he is backed by popular demand. He's a veteran law enforcement leader with over or nearly 30 years of city, county, federal, international law involvement, a former deep undercover narcotics officer, and a two-time chief of police. And he's the author of more than 12 books. And we're going to talk about it. He's just, before we got on, he said, I got one coming out next week, a couple, two or three I'm working on, and it may be 15, 16 now. But Keith, welcome to the program. I know there's going to be people that want to hear what you have to say tonight. How are you?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on for a third time. Hopefully third time's a charm. It's going to be even better this time. I really appreciated your monologue, your introduction with the story about the vase and the beauty in the scars or the cracks. And
so has the scars in your life, let's just because I don't have any set questions.
Yeah.
The scars in your life, have they made you stronger, better, and more focused on what life was meant for you to be to begin with?
Absolutely. When you struggle in life, you appreciate more when you achieve what you're trying to achieve. The person that gets it the first time doesn't have appreciation for what they achieve. The person who has to strive and struggle and fail, and then finally accomplish it appreciates it even more. So for me personally, As a two-time chief of police, as a international law enforcement guy, I failed miserably many a times. And the thing about that is I don't allow those failures to define who I am. It's how I bounce back from those failures that actually defines who I am as a leader, especially. But what it does is it gives me empathy. I understand struggles and I understand what people are going through, and I see other people struggling, so I can step in and maybe explain my story. And that's why I got into writing. One of the main reasons is to tell my story to helpfully help someone not have to go through that struggle. Although I'm doing them a favor, I'm also sometimes hurting people at the same time. If you don't allow, just like raising a child, you got to allow them to have some struggles. You can't give them everything. If you give them everything, they're going to grow up and be spoiled brats as adults, just like they were as children. So, yeah, I believe struggles are what define you and make you a stronger person and a better leader in the end.
One of the things I love about your books, and I've read six of them, I believe, six or seven, that you don't pretend to be perfect. You use your
No.
struggles, you tell deeply, very personal about the struggles, and this is what I learned from. This is what if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't have done it that way. I love that. And being vulnerable is tough for a
Yeah.
person, especially a man, right?
For sure. I think in my book series, my first four books I ever wrote was a series called A Narc's Tale about working deep undercover. But my first book in there really tells about my upbringing and trials and tribulations. And I was diagnosed with a learning disability early on. And at first, I thought that was like, a handicap or something. And then I realized as I got older, I had to work twice, if not four times as hard as somebody to memorize something. So what it did is it created an intense work ethic for me. And over time, I've realized, okay, that what was a struggle is my drive now. That's what created that drive in me. And then I went on further to get a further education because, oh, I had a learning disability. I'm going to prove that that doesn't matter. So moving forward, getting a master's degree and things like that, they were pushed and fueled by a struggle. So in life, if you take that struggle and turn it into a positive as a motivating key factor in your life, you can do great things. I grew up with great parents, but I also went through a period, a wild period, and got in some trouble and did some things. And the people that I encountered in law enforcement after getting in trouble were good to me. And they showed a level of empathy and things worked out for me in that situation. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So I don't ever forget the people that helped me get there, and I try and pass that forward to the next person.
Yeah, that's great. Can I just throw out a couple of current events that's happening locally
Yeah.
and then nationally, and just get your intake on it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Last night, I believe it was last night, 500 to 600 youth downtown Houston took over a whole area with all of this rampant violence
Yeah.
and fighting, and I don't know what it was all doing, but it made the headlines.
Yeah.
What would you do? How would you handle that? What's happening to our youth? And we're seeing this in Seattle, all over the country right now, where they're literally just overtaking
Yeah.
areas. What's happened? What's going on? Where's the gauge, the pattern of
Yeah.
what it takes to be a good, solid citizen? Because it seems like we've lost a
Yeah.
generation there. What's happened?
For me personally, I believe it's the downward diminishment of society due to social media and people not taking responsibility for their actions. Everybody has this victim culture that they're a victim, and if somebody calls me a bad word, it's justified to kill them or it's justified to do damage. What we have to do when we're dealing with these, they're calling them teen takeovers, it's criminal activity involving teenagers and some young adults. What we have to do is hold the ones that are teenagers, hold their parents responsible, hold their caregivers responsible, because those are the only people that are involved in their lives that are going to step up and do something. They're the ones who ingrained in them at a young age that it's okay to not take personal responsibility for these bad acts that you've been doing. This isn't something that came on overnight. This is something that happened from years of not being present as a parent or a caretaker or something like that. But then when you have the adults that are out there, 18 or older, throw the book at them. You have to have some sort of, back in the day in the state of South Carolina, we had a law that was called inciting a riot. And if there was a crowd of people and you were provoking it, you were arrested with the rest of the people who were doing the riot because you were inciting the riot. We have to bring back some things like that. But also we have to make sure that we're trying to understand these kids. What is the reason? Why are they doing this? Is it a curfew problem? Is it just a lack of personal responsibility? What is the underlying issue? You know, I believe a lot of it is, you know, not having two parents in the household.
Yes.
Not having somebody to raise. You know, you see a lot of these, unfortunately, a lot of them are Black youth teens. And that's predominantly what I've been seeing on all the things. I'm seeing a mixture now of others. But you got to look at the single parent household. You have Section 8 housing, for example, in America. 13% of the population is Black in America. 7% approximately are Black males committing approximately about 50% plus of murders and violent crimes. Okay, so that's a skewed number, an absolutely skewed number. Why? What's the issue? Well, Section 8 housing, if you're a single mother and you get married and you bring in a male, you're kicked out of Section 8. So it prevents people and discourages them not to get married. That's part of the issue nowadays. So they don't want in the system, they want to keep you down to a degree. Section 8 housing, I call it modern day slavery to a degree. Give you some subsistence, help you out with some food, help you out with rent, and make sure that you don't get married. And you have these single moms that some of them are working their tails off, two or three jobs. They're just not able to work two or three jobs and be there as a mother. So you have that situation, and then it doesn't help if the male's not allowed. If they bring a male into their house and they're caught sleeping over there, they kick them out of Section 8. I've seen it done. And I understand part of what they're trying to do. You don't want just random men coming and going or anything like that. But I believe that pushes, you know, society, especially a minority group, being oppressed further. And then when you have that, people rise up and they just have no responsibility for their personal actions as teenagers, as youth. And really, there's always this mindset of, well, somebody did something to me. It's because of the system or something. Part of it is because of the system. But you have to take personal responsibility and step up and say, you know what? I'm not going to be a part of that.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid
when somebody got in trouble at school, they got the paddle back then. They got spanked. Yeah. And then when they got home, daddy did it twice again, harder.
Exactly.
That's not the case anymore.
No.
The father doesn't even hardly know it's happening. And then a lot of times when I was on a school board back in Illinois, the only time we'd have a parent in the school board meeting was for them to say, uh-oh, there must be something wrong that happened to their kid. My son wouldn't have done that. And they always were defending their child instead of, thank you for disciplining my child for doing what they did wrong. They always try to find the side door out. To where they don't have to be held responsible. And I think that's half the battle too. They need
that's
to be held responsible for what they do.
Yeah. Holding people responsible at a young age has to start. It can't start when they're 18.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand the concept. There's a consequence to every action. And if you don't ingrain that in a child, by the time they get older, you're going to see what we have going on right now. It's exactly. Yeah. And look at this. Also, you look at influencers, social media influencers, the crazier you are, the more stupid you are, the more followers you have. A lot of times it's not the logical teenager or the logical person that gets on and discusses. It's who can do the shock value. It started back in the day with Howard Stern, you know, shock radio. And then it kind of went to YouTube and then it kind of pushed out to all the social media platforms. It's just, they reward this behavior because it's clickbait. The more you click on it, they monetize it and they make money off of it. So these kids go out there and do these stupid pranks that are not funny, you know, and they create chaos for people. And now you're seeing the extreme other end. They believe that they're not going to get in trouble. Look at the basketball game, the NBA championship, New York Knicks, you know, outside just destroying the city.
Destroyed it.
They're filming them. They're filming them and they know it. Are they going to go back and hold each and every single one of them responsible? Probably not under Mondami, but I believe the police want to, because that's when you go take all the video evidence. There's tons of it. They're capturing, I guarantee you, they're capturing it. Go back and charge these people. And that's the thing. If they're not charged, they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
Is that
Okay,
it's it's
let's do a national thing, and then we'll
all right.
go. That'll take us to the break. Just heard a few hours ago that our president came across and said a peace treaty with Iran has been agreed upon. Iran has told their people, our president's told us that, and there's going to be a signing Friday. What did it take, and what does it take to be a leader in a country like ours that no matter what you do in the world and the political scene we have today, 50% of the people hate you, and no matter what good, I'm waiting to see what everybody says about this. If it does get signed, how are they going to make it look bad? What kind of person does it take to be able
Very,
to be a
very,
leader in this kind of world?
someone who has intestinal fortitude like no other, someone who is not influenced by barking dogs, someone who has conviction, deep conviction for accomplishing something that for 47 years nobody could accomplish. Peace through strength. He tried the diplomatic route over and over, even to the point where a lot of Republicans were against him, like, oh man, you're giving him too much. Even myself was like, wow, whew, he's showing some real strength and resolve here, because I would have already blown him off the map. But this is a man who showed peace through strength when he needed to. And then he gave a little bit and gave him a little rope, was like, listen, you see what we're capable of. And then they're coming to the table. Granted, it's not signed yet. I believe this is the closest they have announced. I just heard before I came in here that Iran spokesperson said that they have reached an agreement. Opening up the Strait of Hormuz is huge. Yes, it was open before, but if Iran had developed the nuclear missiles that they were developing, if they had developed them, they would have been in a position of strength where they could have dictated the gas prices around the world and put it at $10 a gallon, and we couldn't have done a damn thing about it. Because they don't have the nuclear missiles, they can't do that anymore. That was very strategic, and a lot of people look at, oh, they just want the oil or anything like that. No, China's getting their oil from them, so is Russia. We pretty much could cripple them between Venezuela and Iran. We really just, changed the whole market, the whole dynamics of the market. I mean, it's almost like a revolution in the Middle East. And now we have peace deals being brokered with Israel and Muslim nations. Like, you would have never seen these people talking and working together like they are now. So he prevented a much more broad regional war that could have been catastrophic just by, what was it, 100, I forget how long ago, a year ago, I guess, when they bombed, took out the nuke. I can't even remember when it was, the date when they took out the nukes. But the reality is, he prevented something much larger. And I don't think people are going to give him the credit for that. And then there's the negotiation was no nukes, and you can't get nukes, you can't buy nukes, you can't do any of this stuff. So that right there, I just don't think people give Trump enough credit for the thing. He's a master negotiator. And I say this one was probably the hardest negotiation in my lifetime I've ever seen anybody politically be involved in. And I'm
And put in a
appreciative
lot
that.
of blood, sweat, and tears, and took years off his life
Oh, for
of
sure.
knowing it wasn't going to be popular with anybody until if it finally got to a signage place. I just wonder what's in the back of people's minds that have that ability to say, no, I'm going to keep on keeping on because it's the right thing to do.
You get into a position, and on a much smaller scale, like about myself, when I challenged corruption and some ethical violations when I was a brand new young chief in my 30s, and they fired me, and I asked for a public hearing, which I'm entitled to under the law. They denied it. Everything I asked for, they broke the law, and I believe one of the renowned attorneys in the state of South Carolina published a long article in the state newspaper and said, here's 22 violations they committed against Chief Grounsell, but nothing can be done until he sues them. So I got put in a predicament where I had to fight them. I felt like in law enforcement, if your integrity is challenged, that's all you have. Because if you lose your integrity in law enforcement, especially as a leader, it's done. I didn't want to fight, but I was forced to fight. I believe Trump's in the same predicament. Trump has to fight because no matter what he does, they weaponized the DOJ against him originally. Now they're trying to attack him on every single angle. This man ended a war in like 100 days. Afghanistan was almost 20 years, or over 20 years. Vietnam was 17, 19 years. Tens of thousands of people died. Less than 25 died. One is too many. Don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand that.
Right,
my son served and my father served. But the reality is he prevented catastrophic deaths and eliminated what was the world's superpower for terrorism in the Middle East.
That's
and
great.
They're pretty much nothing. They're crippled. And a lot of people just won't see it until later on. It's going to cost them so much money to try and rebuild all the stuff that they're never going to get back up on their feet in my lifetime.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the little commentary on that. Normally we don't do that, but those two things just happened, one today and one last night. But we're going to talk about, on the other side of the commercial break, Built to Lead, the book. And before we get into that, on the other side of the break, I want to talk about your book writing and the ability that you have to be able to pump out books that you do. Right. But we'll do that all on the other side of this commercial break, 888-627-6008. Give us a buzz if you want to chime in. Be right back.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Welcome back. According to that commercial, third book, like, that means nothing to this guy. I am working on a children's book I'm hoping to have out by my birthday at the end of July. I'm excited about that. But how do you do the books you do and the depth, the length, and the ability to be able to, I mean, you just sit at the computer every day and have a goal of what, how many words you're going to type?
So it's kind of crazy right now. I'm able to produce more books because I actually devote about 60 hours a week to writing now. And I've developed a system. I used to, when I first started writing, I made the common mistake of trying to get it the first chapter just right, you know, or, and then I realized, get it done. Just write the book and then go back and edit it. So then I got a system in place to where me personally, I figured out the time I take typing, I'm pretty fast typing, but it's still slower than dictating. So I bought a headset, turned on Microsoft Word, hit the dictation button, and I just tell the story.
Wow.
And I get my stuff done so fast. And then I go back afterwards and make sure, like, if I'm talking and I'll say, oh, well, this is out of line, I'll say, well, this occurred before this event. It's easy to do that when it's your real life. And you're telling real stories. Now, on the flip side, I do a lot of research as well. And thank God for Google Scholar and deep research things that can all be done online. So I'm currently deployed overseas working during the evening hours. I don't really have TV. So for me, I have internet. I have Starlink satellite internet. I utilize that time to take advantage of an opportunity I will not have when I go back home and I have family and all the distractions around me. And it's my mental sanity. And I feel like, you know, I'm personally really driven. So I don't have any issues like setting small goals. You know, I have 4 books in the works right now. And sometimes if I'm really feeling a topic, I'll write about it all weekend. And I won't even sleep maybe 4 hours a night. And I'll wake up first thing, get some coffee and start writing again. And then I stand up when I write. I don't sit down anymore. I have one of those standing desks and I'll start moving and like doing squats and things like that. And just talking, it gets the juices flowing. I believe it releases dopamine in my brain. I just get really a natural high when I get in a rhythm like that. And they say a runner's high. I feel like it's almost like a writer's high. Yeah. When you get into that level. But I mean, the key is not trying to perfect it. Everybody has a story. And it's just a matter of putting it down on paper. And I created what I think is a system that works. I've helped more than 5-6 people recently publish their first books. And they said it's a remarkable system. It's not only about the writing of the book, because that's just one element of it, as you know. You know, you write the book, then you got to decide, are you going to have a big box like publishing agency? Or are you going to solicit queries and try and do all that? Or do you want to self-publish? For me, that was a personal decision of maintaining control of everything because I saw bigger ambitions with my books. And I know everybody sees that. But, you know, for me, my first book series, An Ark's Tale, was picked up by a production company in Pennsylvania. They read the books. They contacted me. I went in and filmed, and they sold some of the films like to A&E, who we ended up having a TV show on A&E called Undercover Caught on Tape. Only had one season. They kind of changed it around. I appeared on like the main pre-episode, and then they transitioned it to something else, and it wasn't what I was expecting it to be, and then they didn't get another season. And then prior to that, I had shared one story with a local television or a movie producer. And he created a movie, a short film called Bound, a human trafficking story. And it won 13 international film festivals. And it was just an undercover story from my time as a DEA special agent. And those things. So I owned all the rights. So I could do whatever I wanted with it. I didn't have to, you know, be binded by a contract where I couldn't. If I signed a contract and got money up front or something like that, I didn't own the rights on the long end. Your book's hot at the beginning. And if they're not pushing it because they have other authors coming in, it can die out. And if you don't own the rights to it, you know, that can create some issues with your ambitions, your goals. For me, now I'm taking all of my books. And if you see above my shoulder, the IGIL Academy, that's the Institute of Global Integrity and Leadership that I created. I'm creating all my books into actually self-paced, online, interactive, scenario-driven leadership schools. And that's like my goal now, because I've already done the research. So once you have the book and the research, it's actually relatively easy. And I had to create an avatar of myself and duplicate my voice and do all these things. And I have a team that's, you know, working with me on that. So I'm super excited to transition the books into an actual training where people can get continuing educational units for wherever they're working and things like that. But yeah, it's constant for me. I'm hungry. I seek to be better every single day. I realize that I'm not even close where I'm going to be. And as long as you stay hungry throughout your life like that, you're always going to achieve more. And you have to be motivated by haters and doubters. For me, yes. I actually, when somebody says, oh, he can't do that, or he didn't do that, man, I'm going to do it. And it's not, I'm not saying from a negative perspective. I'm just saying, if they don't think I can achieve that level of something that I'm striving for, I'm not the type of guy you tell that to, because I'll go after it with everything I got. I don't need to sleep 2 hours a night. I mean, that's just it's always been my approach. 7 days a week, I'm like that. And many people tell you, oh, you're going to get burned out. No, I've never been burned out. It's a natural dopamine release by accomplishing goals. And I tell people all the time, set goals, set small goals, mid-range goals, and long-term goals, and celebrate them when you accomplish them. But also give thanks to God, because every time I struggle, you know, I still thank God for the struggle. Even though in the heat of the moment when it's hard, I do thank him. I know you're doing something here. I don't know what you're doing to me, but I trust it. and I'm going to go with it, and I know I'm going to get through this with you. And I believe that blind faith is one of my probably my stronger feats, my attributes. And I think that never satisfied mindset. Always thinking that you have to do more. That's mine. Now that could be a detriment too, because I never feel like I accomplished something. If I have a day, there's never a day where I've just laid around. Never. I can't do it. It's something in my mind. And my wife's like, just relax, you know, but I can't relax. I always feel like I got to do something today. I don't know what it is. I just got to do something. And that's just how I've always been. I set goals the night before for the next day. I'm constantly just my brain is, I know I need to evolve. If you want to stay relevant in any field, you have to be evolving all the time.
That's great. What the three or four books that you have coming out, what are they about?
So the one that I just it'll be out in the next probably next 5 days is a leadership book on community policing. And a lot of people have asked me, hey, how did you take an agency from never being ranked in the top 25 to the number one safest city in the whole entire state in 2 years? How'd you take another agency from 151st to the top 40 in a year? How'd you do all these community programs? That book tells it. So the book is a roadmap on how to do it, but it's not just for law enforcement. It's for community activists, community leaders, citizens who want to get involved. It has over 100, it's actually 170 programs that are within. Some are larger, some are smaller than others, and some that I actually just made up over the years, and they've been really, really successful. So I've shared them, and they've some of these programs have been implemented around the United States and in other countries. And I just wanted to put it all into one book, but focus on the leadership aspect of how to implement it. So the
Right.
first part of the book actually explains all the programs and the importance of community policing. And then the latter part of the book is worksheets, forms, all that stuff, actually how to implement the programs. So, I mean, I'm excited about that one. I wrote another book on frontline leadership for corporals and sergeants, the first line supervisors. And that one I have been implemented, like not implemented, but I have it being tested in a few law enforcement agencies across the United States. I gave them
See.
free copies. I wanted them to give me direct feedback, and I'm waiting on a little bit more feedback on that one to see if I need to tweak anything or anything like that. And then I had one on field training officers. When a rookie cop gets out of training, they go to a field training officer for 12 to 22 weeks. And that is their very first exposure to a supervisor. That person is probably the most important supervisor they will ever be with, and they will mold them. And most cops mimic some qualities of their FTO. So I wrote a book on that, and that one just took off. It started selling pretty good recently. So I'm super excited, but I have a sociological and criminological textbook I'm writing for university level stuff on theories of crime. That Something I'm just interested in doing research on.
Okay, you even have books by kids or for kids, and your children helped you write them. Was that
Absolutely.
their request or your request for them to get involved with those? Because
So,
I've read all of those. Those are all good.
thank you. I appreciate
Those are
that. So
great.
it's called the Kids Character and Confidence series. I just saw a dwindling of, family, like we talked about earlier, parents not having those deep conversations about certain things with their children. So I wrote the first one as a surprise for my oldest son, Caleb, who's currently serving in the U.S. Army active duty. And it was just a surprise. Well, the next one I was like, it's called Caleb's Journey of Kindness. It has 22 lessons in life that you should teach your youth. And it really sparks really good, deep conversations. So the next one was Noah. And I was like, you know what? I want to help my children to achieve something as well. Wouldn't it be neat if we could co-author these books and they could become published authors as well at a young age, help them for college and resumes and all that? So that's where it came from. And Noah says no, when it's okay to say no, inappropriate touching, like we've talked about before, and just different situations where it's not being bratty. When a kid says no, if something makes them feel uncomfortable, what are those things? So it goes in great detail. And then my daughter, she's probably my most studious one. And she wrote one book that was like a fantasy book that I'm working on with her, like proofreading it. And then we came out with McKenna's book of just to teach girls like different things that they encounter in life. And it's pretty neat. You know, she was super excited about it. She's a cheerleader, so she has a little cheerleader at the camp. She's going to give a book this year. And it's not a big money maker. It's not about that. It's really about, you know, helping the kids because they're our future. And you see these teen takeovers, that's because nobody hit them early with these type of books and had these deep conversations with them and led them. They're learning how to become adults by social media
And these are
instead
all
of
good gifts for the
from a
kids.
parent.
What did say, 8 to 12?
I would say, so some of them you can read as young as like, you know, five. They couldn't read them, but somebody can read it to them. And depending upon the child, that they would understand. And I got another one that I'm going to do that's going to be a surprise. That's for my youngest son, Hunter. I hadn't spoken much about it, but Hunter was adopted, and he was born a drug addicted baby, and he was addicted to opioids and crack
Oh
cocaine,
my.
and so he went through the withdrawals, and we had to do a series of medical things with him, and now he's pretty much high functioning autism. He's on the spectrum, but he has a learning disability, has a rough time. But he's pretty social, surprisingly. You know, he likes people, but he can be overwhelmed at times. So I'm going to write, you know, as when he gets older and he's at the right age where we can tell him things, I'm writing a book kind of to present to him and about
Oh,
how
that's gonna be
special
neat.
he is. So I'm super excited about that because a lot of parents go through that, and it's
Yeah.
something that, you know, you'd never realize how much you can love another child that's not of your own blood just as much as your own children until you're in that predicament. And
Yeah.
it's just the most amazing experience.
I kind of reread quick read again, Built to Lead this afternoon.
Ooh.
If in the final few minutes we have, I want to drill down in a couple chapters and just see how far it gets us. It's probably going to take us to where we have to have the fourth interview. Chapter 9, discipline is the leader's daily standard.
Absolutely.
What? And you talked about how I call it anal in my life
Yeah.
because I'm anal on certain things. I got
Yeah.
to do it this way. What's the importance of discipline for anybody that wants to be successful in their life, no matter what
Yeah.
lane they're driving in, vocationally and socially, and you know, all the leaves? How
Yeah.
important is discipline to be a leader?
It's very important. So when it comes to discipline, it starts with self, first and foremost. If you can't self-discipline, you can't lead others because people are watching you all the time. So if you put on this front at work and then you go home in your neighborhood, you act like a totally different person, people aren't going to have any respect for you. So first and foremost, it starts with like healthy mind, body, and spirit. And those things are the big three combo. And if you concentrate on those things, like for me, I wake up in the morning. And you know, I drink water just to get going. I eat breakfast. I work out every single morning, and that does something for me. It's a win. It's just like making your bed in the morning. You feel okay, I just accomplished something. No matter how small it is, you're accomplishing something, and that's part of that self-discipline. So if you do that every single morning, you have a win early in the morning. Then you have a routine at night, and if you do that routine at night, you have a win. And then during the day, you have your tough meetings or your tough engagements at a certain time when you're at your peak, whether it be
Oh,
10 a.m., 11 a.m.
do you know when your peak is?
Oh man, I'll be honest with you. So for me, I'm pretty unique, but I feel like around 10 a.m. sometimes is probably, I'm not hungry for lunch yet, especially if I have like a protein bar or something like that. But I get natural highs off of different things. So it really, I've worked through lunch countless times, and I'll have my administrative assistant bring a sandwich into me because they call me the sandwich guy. I always had a sandwich because I never went out to lunch because I never stopped for lunch. So I would just type and eat a sandwich as I'm typing. And that was just, when I get in a mode, I can't stop. It's like
So
a
do you
machine.
believe that everybody, like mine's like 4:30, 5 o'clock till about 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm that early morning nut.
Oh,
That's when
yeah.
my mind is literally, it's like that sweet spot
Yeah.
on the golf club. And if you hit that spot or on a baseball bat or whatever, it's going to go further.
Absolutely.
How do people gauge what they're because I think a lot of people are texting, scrolling, doing goofy stuff
Yeah.
during their peak time. How important is it to find out what your peak time is?
It's very difficult if you have a distraction, a cell phone. If you can set that aside, if you're in a position to where you can set it aside and focus on the task at hand, you'd be surprised how little time it actually takes to accomplish something that would take you five times that amount of time with all the distractions
Yeah.
going on. So I've tried to do that. I'll set the phone off to the side when I'm in a zone. I'll tell my wife, hey, I'm in my zone. And she knows, like, just go.
Yeah.
And then having that support system of people that recognize that realize, hey, but as a chief, I would have 20, 30 interruptions a day, coming through with stuff going on. And for me, I'm a very quick decision maker. I'm very decisive. And that's a really good characteristic of a leader because I'm not afraid to make a decision and I'm not afraid to fail. But I make calculated decisions. But when they come to small decisions, boom, boom. If I go buy my wife, she laughs, I can go pick out furniture, outfits, a car in 5 minutes and never even second guess it at the end. And she's the opposite. She calculates everything, prices it out, does everything. For me, I just don't like to waste a lot of time. I feel like, time is valuable. Time is money, and I can be accomplishing something else. So I'm going to set my mind to this, go accomplish that, move on to the next task. And I think for me, that's how I live. But finding your peak time would depend upon when is your creative mindset come out? When are you thinking of the things like planning, setting goals? When does that come to your mind? Is it first thing? Some people it's late at night to have a notepad by their nightstand. I used to do that, but now I have it in my phone in my notes. So I'm always, for me, it was hard to pinpoint that when you ask that question, because I feel like I'm always
Yeah.
running at a peak and I
But
go up and down
when you
up and up.
find it, shouldn't we protect it? I
You should
mean,
protect it with putting your most important task of the day,
absolutely. And I always
for
tell the people
sure.
that I supervise, if you will just work during your peak time an hour or two a day, you can play the other
You do
6 hours,
everything.
but you're not accomplishing anything for the whole entire 8 hours because
Yes.
you're not zeroed in. Just zero in during that peak time. And the rest of it, you'll get more accomplished than you ever dreamed of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. It takes discipline, and focus and the ability to tell people like, hey, listen, this is my time. I'm
Yeah.
devoting to this, and don't be interrupted.
Well, tell you what, Keith, we're out of time again. Thank you so much for being on. Look right here to over his shoulder there. There's Built to Lead. I highly recommend that. Shattered Chains. I highly recommend that. Leadership Under Fire. All six of those. I have not read Policing Without Borders, but I've read the other five, and one of those is like a three part. The Narc's Tale is
Yeah, it's
three
four
parts.
part book series. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
pretty
so it's quite
detailed
a
and
few,
working deep
but.
undercover.
Try one of his, and then you're going to end up trying several. Keith, thank you so much for being on, and
Thanks,
be
Greg. I
safe over
appreciate it.
there in the other
God bless.
country while you're on a mission, and
Amen.
may God protect you, and thank you so much. I'd love to have you back.
Anytime.
I'd say
Thank
I'd
you.
have you back every time a book comes out, but you'd be a co-host for every
Appreciate
week.
it.
Thank you so
Yeah.
much for being
Thanks,
who you
Greg.
are. I appreciate you, Keith.
God bless you.
Thank you so much for sharing, as we do each and every week. No matter what you're going through, I always want to let you know. It's getting ready to storm out here. I'm hearing the thunder and seeing a little bit of the lightning back behind me. But I promise you, it eventually is going to stop raining. No matter what you're going through, that sun's going to end up coming up. So there's always, always hope. Find something, stick with it, never give up, find a trusted friend, share, and never say, I'm worthless. Never forget there's hope, no matter what. And I challenge you to give Christ a chance. Give him a chance. Give him an opportunity to see what you think of that. And I think that would be an important decision also for your life. Thank you so much. Join us right here next week. You will not want to miss next week. We have a chief of police, Matt, is going to be on with Scoop Jackson, television reporter up in Dallas, Texas. That he's getting ready to write a book. the chief, and it's going to be coming out probably October, November. We're going to have him on telling his story of how he kept his hurt and pain quiet for over 40 years. So be with us next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome night. See you next week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.